welcome to Keep the Bastards Honest, the podcast of the Australian Democrats. I'm your host, Alana Mitchell, and on this episode, a 34-time convicted felon is returned to the White House. So we're back. I owe all of our listeners an apology. I hadn't intended for there to be an almost 3-month long hiatus between episodes, but as we like to say, events, dear boy, events kind of took over. Things were very busy in Australian Democrats HQ, keeping in mind that we are a completely volunteer-run party. So we're all working behind the scenes around our jobs, families, businesses, and other commitments. We had candidate selections for the upcoming federal election. WA had a state election. We've disrupted up our first national convention since COVID disrupted face-to-face events. And now we're prepping for the federal election. Whew. The good news is that we should have a tsunami of content for you in the weeks and months to come, which, if you're following us on the social media platform of your choice, you've probably had hints of over the last few weeks. So let's take a look at what's happened since I wished everyone a Merry Christmas, shall we? It's safe to say that our last episode aged like fine wine after the US election on November 5th, if that wine was on the Titanic when it sank. As my North American correspondent said in the aftermath of the election, never speak of politics to me again because I'm obviously full of shit, which I think is a little bit harsh, but also understandable considering he lives in Ohio, which is where J.D. Vance is from. As much as I thought Kamala Harris could win, as much as I would have liked her to have won, I was also bitterly unsurprised to see Trump take not just the Electoral College, but Congress, the Senate, and even the popular vote. Despite my well-documented belief that Harris would win, indeed for the sake of her country and the free world, needed to win, in hindsight, Trump winning kind of felt inevitable. And it wasn't so much Trump winning as the US Democrats revealing how out of touch they were with the lived experiences of so many of their countrymen and constituents. Steady as she goes, technocratic competence, delivering what felt like more of the same, simply wasn't cutting it anymore. The problems that so many of the people in the United States were facing just weren't going to be solved by that, at least not quickly, which is what people wanted and needed. Or more importantly, for the people affected by those problems, it didn't feel like it was going to be solved. So when you've got a binary choice between continuing to vote for more of the same and the same isn't solving any of the critical issues that are troubling you, or you can vote for a guy that deep down you probably know is going to be a disaster, but at least the last thing he's going to deliver is more of the same, I do kind of get why people voted for Donald Trump. I mean, I wouldn't have done it. And I don't think they should have, but I think Trump is what happens when a large part of society loses hope for their future. It appears that a large number of people who, on paper, should not have been part of Trump's constituency, voted for him, not because they particularly liked him or had jumped on the MAGA bandwagon, but because they wanted to lash out at a society, at institutions, and a system of government they felt had failed them. Because when you have no hope for your future, why not set fire to your present and see what happens? Especially when the guy you're voting for is promising vengeance on the people you blame for your hopeless future. What's happened, of course, is that America now seems to be led by a bunch of fascist broligarchs who are busily dismantling what little social security, a hyper-individualistic, capitalist society like the US was capable of, and shredding all of its regulations to allow their businesses and companies maximum freedom to do whatever they want and not pay any taxes while they do it. I mean, watching Elon Musk perform a literal Nazi salute, not once, but twice, just in case we had any doubts as to what it was he was doing the first time he did it, should have been a clue as to what the last couple of months would bring. But I certainly wasn't prepared for it. And I don't think the rest of the world was either. I don't think I'm being hyperbolic when I say that America is a failed state, that it is turning into the kind of country that If it was in possession of vast reserves of oil and gas, America would invade in order to restore democracy and freedom to it. When Donald Trump threatened to take Greenland from Denmark by force if Denmark didn't sell Greenland to the US, the Denmark government apparently responded by offering to buy the United States minus its government. A quote attributed to the Danish government said, "We believe that by giving the US an educational system and national health care, it could be transformed from a vast landmass into a great nation." And I am so, so disappointed to have to tell you that the Danish government's alleged response to Trump's offer to buy Greenland originated as a satirical New Yorker article in 2019. I've put a link in the show notes. This is the great burden of being an evidence-based party. This is the first time I fact-checked something I really wished was true. But joking aside, we are watching the unraveling of the only remaining democratic superpower, and we're 9 weeks into Donald Trump's second term as president. To put it in context, we have about 200 weeks to go. Assuming, of course, that the United States, as a country and as a system of government, is still sufficiently intact to hold a presidential election in 2028. Because if the next 200 weeks continue in the same vein as the last nine, there's no guarantee of that. Which really puts all of the United States' allies, including Australia, in a real bind. I mentioned at the top of the episode that we had just wrapped up our first national convention since COVID. I'm the party's defence and foreign affairs spokesperson, and I was invited to give a talk on our defence platform, AUKUS, and our role in the Pacific when we first started organising the conference last year. And at the time I agreed to give the talk, that sounded like a really fascinating intellectual exercise, since AUKUS was Australian policy and law, and the two legacy parties were in lockstep on it, which they still are. So our position, in which we argue for a more independent foreign policy and a defence platform which is focused on a sovereign self-defence of Australia and the broader Pacific, with weapons and equipment procurement to support a self-defence position, rather than plugging into the United States war machine, while acknowledging and honouring the long friendship and alliance between Australia and the United States, seemed like a quaint, minor party fancy. At the time of recording, a week ago, I finished my talk on defence by saying that in light of the rapid and unscheduled disassembly of the entire post-war global order over the last couple of weeks, that if either of the major parties were looking around for an evidence-informed, independent self-defence platform, they were welcome to borrow ours. I'm going to put a link to our defence platform in the show notes, but with the massive caveat that in light of the last few weeks, we're going to have to update it again, which will be very, very soon, since we'll need to get it done before the election, and we will have a podcast dedicated to it. Speaking of podcasts, I correctly predicted on a previous episode that we would have a May election, cyclones notwithstanding, and therefore we're going to have a pre-election budget. I got to spend some time with my co-host extraordinaire Steve Beattie at the National Convention, and he reminded me about the budget as we were saying goodbye at the end of the day. So he will be on board, as always, for a budget discussion, and I might bring in former Dunkley candidate and now lead Senate candidate for Victoria, Heath McKenzie, to round out the brains trust on that one. If Heath is listening to this, that will come as a surprise to him, since I haven't asked him yet. But like any Australian Democrat, he's always up for a chat. So I'm fairly confident in making promises on the lineup of that episode. We also owe you a wrap-up of the WA state election. Our WA division president, the irrepressibly brilliant Lisa Griffiths, ran as an independent in her local electorate of Bibra Lake and did the party immensely proud. There are reasons why she had to run as an independent and not an Australian Democrat in that election, but we will cover that in that episode. We're weeks away at most from the federal election being called, and it's likely to be one of the most consequential elections this country has seen. One of the things that sets us apart from the US is that despite all the significant problems Australia faces, we still have hope. The electorate is disenfranchised and frustrated with the two legacy parties who, like the Democrats and Republicans in the US, are either offering technocratic, steady as she goes, more of the same, or a wannabe Trump trying to borrow from the MAGA playbook in order to small target his way into power only 3 years after his party was removed from office because of their gross incompetence and corruption. But the key difference for Australia is that, thanks to our preferential voting system and the configuration of our parliament, we have more options than a binary choice between the two legacy parties. And judging by the polling, Australia is determined to exercise those options. Everyone focuses on the House of Representatives, since that's where government is formed and where all the theatre and drama happens. But if the election results in a minority government, as expected, then the Senate will be even more crucial in ensuring that legislation receives the scrutiny it needs. If you're looking for a non-major party option to vote for in this election, don't forget that it's just as important to keep the two legacy parties out of the Senate as it is to keep them out of the House of Reps. This election is an opportunity for you to help the Australian Democrats return to our home in the Senate to keep the bastards honest. But we need your help. The biggest hurdle we have is letting the electorate know we're still around for everyone over the age of 40, and that we exist at all for everyone who's too young to remember when we were last in Parliament. So we'd love it if you told your friends and family about us and encouraged them to vote for us. We'd love it even more if you donated to us. I know times are incredibly tough, but we have no major donors, we receive no government funding, we're funded entirely by our members and supporters, and elections are really expensive. To register a single candidate is $2,000, and then you've got a ton of other expenses to run a campaign and get the word out. And we'd especially love it if you joined us and volunteered for us on election day. Having people representing the party at polling places makes a huge difference. If you want a better parliament and better politics, and hell, better politicians representing you, you have to step up. You have to get involved. It's the only way. Otherwise, you leave our democracy in the hands of those who can afford to purchase it. And we're watching the results of that unfold in real time in the United States. To finish this episode on a happy note, Keep the Bastards Honest was listed in the Million Podcasts Top 100 Accountability Podcast for 2025. Million Podcasts is a podcast media contact database for PR professionals, but it does mean that they know podcasts. And to my great surprise, we were not in the 100th spot on the list. We were 51, considering we have no advertisers, no corporate sponsorship, no professional podcast studio or producers. We're immensely chuffed to have even ended up on a list. If you like the podcast and would like to support us, if the podcast platform that you listen to us on allows you to, we'd love it if you rated and reviewed us in order to help others find and listen to Keep the Bastards Honest. And one final bit of news, the Australian Democrats now has a Substack. We have a huge amount of really excellent commentary and analysis on our blog on our website. So we thought that instead of waiting for an audience to find our stuff on our website, we'd take the stuff on our website to where the audience is. So if you like long-form journalism and commentary, you can now read ours on our Substack, which is called Radically Sensible. Because in a post-truth, anti-science, anti-evidence world, to be sensible is now a radical act. You can subscribe for free on Substack, and I've put a link in the show notes. I'll be back very soon, I hope, with our analysis of the 2025 federal budget. Take care. Keep the Bastards Honest is brought to you by the Australian Democrats. This episode was edited and produced by me, Alana Mitchell. If you'd like to keep in touch, you can find us on Facebook, the platform formerly known as Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, Spoutable, YouTube, and TikTok by searching for Australian Democrats. And you can see what we stand for, what we value, and what our policy positions are at our website at democrats.org.au. Email us at info@democrats.org.au. Until next time. Thanks for listening.